Good morning, Russell.
Good morning, Kim.
I'm Kim Kirkendall. We're going to walk you through today transfer pricing. So, you know, a lot of companies are confused about transfer pricing, when it's applied, how it's applied, if they're compliant with it after they've chosen a method. So we thought this would be a really good opportunity to dive into this situation with companies. So Russell, I'm going to let you kick this off, and then I'll interject here and there with some questions or client experiences.
Thank you, Kim. Welcome, everybody. So transfer pricing, maybe to sum it up before I go into the more detailed slides. First of all, it's not rocket science. It's not science. It's not precise. It's actually a balance between the tax systems of different countries and finding a fair price between a price of products or services between two related parties within your company group. So it falls in what I call sort of a gray, but it's about finding the right balance of grayness between two different countries. So it's about finding equilibrium. And there are regulations that try to talk about formulaic aspects of transfer pricing. But in reality, what you're trying to do is you're trying to keep two different tax bureaus and two different jurisdictions happy with what you're doing. And so that's the key front of it. It's about balance. You have to reasonably paying reasonable tax somewhere, pricing what you do with your related companies in a fair arm's length manner. So I'm going to give an overview of transfer pricing, a look a little bit from a business context, look at some different methodologies that can be used in terms of determining what the pricing might be, and then going through what documentation you should have in place to support your pricing. And lastly, what happens if you get investigated by a tax bureau? Now, although my focus is predominantly geared to China, actually transfer pricing is pretty universal worldwide. Each country has its own regulations, but they generally follow OECD guidelines. And so there's quite a lot of similarity between policies in different countries. So the first question, how and when does a company determine its intergroup pricing? Well, the moment a company starts selling intergroup, so selling to a subsidiary, whether it's one, two or three levels down, it doesn't matter, it's still within the same group. It has to determine what the price of that product or service is. Or I say product or service, but it could be other passive income, such as interest on a loan, or it could be royalties on use of trademark or intellectual property. So you need to determine what the price of that is. And the second thing is, how does the tax authority test that pricing? Well, they look at what's called arm's length. Now, you could say, okay, how long is an arm? But in reality means is, if you were selling to a third party that was totally unrelated, what would you sell that product or service for to them? And so that's the principle of arm's length. It's about and it doesn't mean that it has to be exact per se to example the end customer. If you normally would have a distributor in the middle, maybe you'd be selling to your own distributor and company at a slight disc, but then they would be on selling. So it's about looking at the margins along the whole chain of events. In terms of a process chart, first, what is the business or what is being charged? How do you design and implement the transfer pricing policy? How do you support and document it? What's the risk test on that? Does it pass the smell test? And then is it defensible if you're ever challenged in either jurisdiction? Because remember, it involves two jurisdictions. We do have tax treaties between different countries, and these can always be looked at as well for looking at how transfer pricing might be applied. But generally, they're looked at from a defense perspective to stop you from paying double tax. But if you're investigated and you are made to put through an adjustment in your accounts, normally an adjustment may not be acceptable on the other side in the other jurisdiction as a deduction. So the two key areas that are looked at, industry and economic analysis. The tax bureau will say we're not experts in everything, so educate us. So any documentation's first point of call is education, educating the tax officers on your industry, the economics of the industry, and some of the mechanics of the industry. And the second is function and risk. What functions does an entity undertake, and what risk does it undertake? Looking at risk reward, higher risk, higher potential reward, also higher potential loss as well. But it's looking at the functions of the business. According to the OECD guidelines, when they look at industry and economic analysis, They actually describe it as general commercial and industry conditions, such as information explaining the current business, forecast changes, forecasting incidents influencing tax paying, market scale, competitive conditions, regulatory framework, technical progress, etc. If we look at function and risk, then it's saying the OECD guidelines compensation usually will reflect the functions that each enterprise performs. So if you've got an enterprise that does no function, it's purely a pass-through, then actually the reward that it's taking for those functions should be small, where if an entity is taking most of the risk and most of the functions, the rewards will be expected to be larger, at least as a general baseline. In dealing between two independent enterprises, compensation usually will reflect the functions of that enterprise and determining whether controlled or uncontrolled transactions are being carried out. So companies, and I'll talk about documentation later, but they'll normally look at their function risk analysis. So in summary, function risk analysis is an overview of the value chain. So it's a value chain from right at the beginning of within an organization to the end when the product leaves to an external party within an organization. And it's an explanation of the roles and the responsibilities of each related party. So I've got a graph here that just shows what a structure might look like: UK parent, distribution company in China, Germany, and UK, regional center, manufacturing in Vietnam, Malaysia, and Korea. And different arrows dotted around between delivery of goods, supply of services, financing. You could also wrap around royalties. Each of these related party transactions would have a price. One entity would be taking income, the other entity will be taking a cost. Where there's a top co, and the example in this example, there's three distribution companies. Normally, there's expected to be consistency within the pricing amongst the group. When companies hit a certain size under the OECD guidelines, which China's signed up to, and many other countries around the world have also signed up to, actually, they need local files that prove the filing and the pricing for local purposes, but they also have a group pricing structure policy, which should show consistency. So they're not deliberately profit stripping down the chains and bringing it all back through a low tax haven and through a provincially possibly into head office. So in terms of function risk detail, the characteristics of the goods, and again, remember, it's an education process for the Tax Bureau. In China, actually, if you're product transactions are above 200 million RMB a year, or services and passive income above 40 million a year within related parties, there is a requirement to do a comprehensive annual transfer price filing with the government, which is detailed and would include full risk and function analysis and also economic situations, the industrial situation, etc. If you're below that, there's no requirement to actually produce that annually. There is a requirement for foreign companies to have an annual audit. And within the annual audit, in the notes, there's a requirement to detail the nature of the related party transactions that have been carried out. But the Tax Bureau actually can investigate any company. So that's just a filing requirement, whether you need to file or not file. It doesn't mean that you can't be earmarked for an investigation. So we always advise all companies that they should have done some kind of analysis just to demonstrate that their pricing is arm's length and is reasonable within their group. Specific characteristics of goods or services, the function that the company is performing, intercompany contractual terms, economic circumstances, the geographical markets, and business strategies. In a more detailed list of functions on the next slide, we've got just an example. So research and development, design, manufacturing, assembly, distribution, sales, marketing, financing, advertising, after sales services, management information, administrative support, foreign exchange management. This is not a comprehensive list. It can be much wider, but the whole concept is whatever functions are being carried, documented. And then with those, you would document what percentage of those you are carrying out.
So Russell, let me ask you a question, kind of make a comment here. I think a lot of companies think that transfer pricing is all numbers, that you take the cost that you're selling it for, you know, plus a markup, and then you look at what you're, let's say you're selling it to a wholly owned distributor in another country, one of your own companies. And then you look at what they're selling it for, and you look at the price that you sell that same product to other customers for. And so I think a lot of companies don't really grasp that you can take those numbers and you can adjust them you know, up or down, or, and that's really a lot of what you've been talking about, is examining the functions of the company and the benefits that each party contributes, you know, and that allows you to say, okay, we may be selling it at $2.50 to everyone else, but arguably we could sell it at $2.30 or $2.80 in the related party transaction because of these things. You know, do you think that's a, that makes sense for people, to help people understand?
Yes, I think it does. It starts off as a numeric exercise because you would look at all your costs. You would look at what pricing you do externally to third parties and what pricing you'd be looking at internally. So it starts off as quantitative. But then you would also wrap around qualitative narrative to, and also the analysis of function and risk, to determine that the pricing seems reasonable. Additionally, if we look at a defense of a situation, we had a client, for instance, that was making a loss, and they made a loss for more than 2 years in a row. So they got earmarked investigation. And the tax bureau couldn't understand how they were making a gross income loss. So it wasn't even the bottom line. It was the gross income side. And the reason why they were making a loss was for two reasons. One was the cost of raw materials had gone up. But their sales price, this is in the chemical industry, their sales price was fixed in a term contract, which they couldn't change. And the second thing was the exchange rate had gone against them, which again, hit them because their sales price was fixed in another currency, which they couldn't change. So we put together a whole metrics of not just functional risk, but also proving what had caused the change in the pricing structure, and therefore how they couldn't increase their price, the sales price, to get the margin. And in the end, they were fined with the tax bureau on the basis that it was circumstances that they couldn't adapt to, and that their pricing had been reasonable at the point that they set it, but later on it had become unreasonable, but they were stuck in stone.
That's a great example, Russell. I have a client in exactly that situation right now. And their Chinese team is very concerned about, you know, recording losses and not being able to support transfer pricing. So yeah, that's a great example. I'm sorry to interrupt you. Please go ahead.
No, I think that's good. And also, I suppose that you could take another view in terms of pricing more recent is tariffs and how tariffs affect the pricing, because you've got to, how do you balance the pricing between products coming in from China to the US, for instance, and or vice versa with relation to the tariffs? So risks encountered within that function risk analysis. So I've talked about the functions, so the risks, R&D success or R&D failure if invested in R&D, market success, market failure. From within market, you might, I mean, some companies might make a loss in China initially because they're after market share. So they might deliberately price low in, price low out. Financial risk, who takes the risk of foreign exchange, or who takes the risk of financing, who takes the risk of collecting from clients. Product guarantees, product liability, who takes the risk of warehousing or obsolescence or theft, and sales risk, excessive warranty costs, etc. So there's many different risks and go around each function as well. And who takes the risk? It might be that the function is carried out, for instance, in China for the delivery of the product, but for instance, the US might guarantee the product liability. So they take some function, but the risk still stays with the US. So on the next slide, we've got a simple snapshot of what you might put together in an Excel sheet, where you would list out all your functions, you would look at which functions are being carried out, and then you'd look at how that equated to the overall risk and function of a business in China or the US or elsewhere, and then you would look at that relative to the pricing. Remember, this is the qualitative part, but you've also got the quantitative part. So it's all about coming up with a rounded, balanced view of your pricing overall. You'd look at responsibility centers, expenses, cost centers, revenue centers, profit centers, and this would be more with the figures, the quantitative analysis, but you would look at the allocating different costs and how the revenue might attach to different functions within the organization, if each function was a value-added function in its own right. And then you'd come on to your methodology. Now, depending on what you're doing, would depend on which methodology might be most appropriate. Regardless of which methodology you choose, at the end of the day, most tax bureaus will take a very simplistic view. And what they'll do is say, okay, you've got your methodology, you've proved your methodology, you might have even applied another methodology to test the methodology that you've used, but they're always going to go back to generally one thing, which is they're going to do a comparable analysis, or they're going to want you to do a comparable analysis, where you're going to look at similar companies in your industry from a database, and you're going to see how do your overall margins meet with the industry average. And within a sample of different companies, which would be narrowed down from thousands, possibly down to a few like-minded entities, they would run a standard deviation curve. They would expect you to be somewhere within the middle two quarters, at least not in the bottom two quartiles, but in the top, but not the bottom quartile, but at least in the second or third. Of course, if you're on the fourth, you're well okay because you've got higher margin. But then remember, transfer pricing is about balance. So if you're making too much margin in one country, you're not making enough margin in another. So normally you want to be within the median range of a standard deviation curve when doing a comparable analysis. So in terms of key methodologies, transactional method, so that is comparable uncontrolled pricing method, resale price method, cost plus method. Profit orientated methodologies might be transaction net margin method, profit split method. In China, as in many other countries, they also have another one called other, which is basically if there's another method that's specific to your country and you can demonstrate, specific to your industry, sorry, and you can demonstrate that that's how your industry operates, then again, educate them and they'll look at it. In terms of which industries or which functions might use different methodologies. If you're purely manufacturing to sell products to your head office, you're probably more likely to use a cost plus method. And if we go on to use a cost plus method, if you're a distributor or you're a service industry company, you're more likely to use a cost plus method. If you're manufacturing where you're selling to third parties, but you're also selling to yourself as well internally, you might move to a gross profit markup or even a profit resell. So you would look at which method suits the whole flow of the functions and the risk. An example of what I've just got here, we've got a distribution company, which is buying. So we've got a manufacturing company, which is buying products, making products. They're selling to a distribution company, which is selling on. They're making a margin and then of 1,000. The distribution company is making a margin before it's selling on. Both are actually making a 10% margin, which is seen as reasonable. But the transfer pricing method that they're using there is cost plus, and then the distribution company's on selling. They would test the pricing through a controlled comparable method to see whether that was reasonable and before it went to the distribution company. Another way of doing it would be profit split. So would they split profits equally? Or in this example, actually, they use split profits according to the top line sales. So that's another way of doing it. Or would they look at a transactional method, so gross profit line instead? In this example, if they looked at gross profit line, actually the manufacturing business would be making a 20% there margin where the distribution company would make a 5%. So it wouldn't actually really be reflective because they're different natures of function and risk. One is taking all the risk. One is taking less risk, but its pure function is sales. So on this next slide, it just shows an example of maybe an idea of what kind of industries might use, what kind of natures and functions and risks might use different methods. So sales or services could be cost plus or could be CUP method, distribution, resale pricing method, R&D or contract manufacturing might be cost plus. Sales or marketing could be profit split, could also be CUP. Distribution and commissions might be transaction net method. But it's really down to the business that you're in and the nature, and also having consistency throughout the group. I've talked about external comparables, but you can also use a supporting internal comparables. If you have a cost plus method that you use across many countries already, and you're just going into China and you're using the same methodology, the same pricing, because you're already working within tax jurisdictions using a pricing, it's not unreasonable that you could continue using that pricing within China. they would still want you to do a comparable analysis to prove, but it's not unreasonable that you can use internal information also to compare and demonstrate that your pricing is reasonable.
This is a good time to interrupt and ask this question, but one of the contradictions that I've seen with some clients is they develop a, what I would call a bottom-up transfer pricing. So they basically say, we're going to cost plus, we're going to have a 10% margin on our products and our business. And they, but then what happens is there's a material price increase or an exchange rate difference. And rather than adjust those prices month by month, as the prices have increased, the US doesn't accept higher prices from their Chinese factory, because their response is, over the course of the year, the material prices and the exchange rate may change, and our net profit at the end of the year will be in line with what we set as the target. But my concern is, isn't the cost plus method or adding a profit margin method, isn't that on a order by order basis, and or can you massage it over the course of a year to meet the requirements?
It can be by, quite often companies will do it by product line or product type, taking into account the complexity of a product. The problem with cost plus, as you quite rightly say, is you're fixing something now, which might go against the circumstances, economic circumstances in the future. One of the issues that we have in China is there is a regulation that says that if a company is selling the majority of its products to a related party overseas, it must make a margin. That does actually cause an issue when the overall situation of a group might be loss-making, particularly during a year like COVID. And the tax officials in China seem to think that actually, well, China should still be making a margin for the functions that it's carrying out.
So is the company really best practice to modify its prices monthly where it can to maintain the margins that it's set? Or can they have 6 months of losses to later be offset by 6 months of profit?
Yes. Yeah, so the other thing that could be looked at is, instead of looking at the bottom line, looking at gross income line before operating overheads, because at that line, you're only offsetting variable costs, which would provide a more consistent basis. And then your overheads, which of course, I mean, some of your overheads are pretty fixed. You can't really allocate. You can't upscale or downscale much. Mm. Might take you to a bottom line loss situation, but your gross margin level has some consistency. The other thing is to look at possibly having standard costing system. So to show consistency in pricing over periods of time, so you balance out the ups and the downs.
Okay, great. Those are great ideas. Thank you.
I mean, COVID, I think, has tested everybody's margins. And definitely, I think, where companies may have looked at a bottom cost plus, or by moving, saying, well, actually, let's do an analysis further up in the profit and loss, you can find it might be possible to find a little bit more consistency to be able to demonstrate that it's not, losses aren't being caused by doing anything different. They're being caused by the economic circumstances at the time. So in terms of documentation, normally in the documentation, we would want an introduction to the group, an analysis of the industry and the environment, details of the group structure, shareholding or distribution, transactions within the group, supported by financial data where available, definitely locally. And if a public company or company which is more transparent, some at higher level, or at least having that in the background as defense of margins, looking at the assets being utilized and asset utilization. Looking at the policy, the group's transfer pricing policy, the business strategy and what pricing has been chosen. Looking at commercial terms, it's putting together a document that summarizes what you've done. As I mentioned, quantitative is the financial review. Qualitative is the descriptions and the explanation. Looking at the risks, which we talked about already. Looking at the amount of value that's being added by those functions at that entity level. Explaining why the pricing is arm's length and why it's justified, and then doing this comparable analysis, I think, is the most important, because as long as you're within that median range of that standard deviation curve, then you should always be remembered. The tax bureau have a lot more information than any other company does, because they've got information on everybody. And in China, that's all in a big database. So their database is far more advanced than any other database that any company that can use. Now, it is sometimes possible that the tax bureau may come up with their own comparable analysis and that you might disagree with that, but that's fine. Then you go in a defense, you go and say, well, actually, these three companies you've picked are not really similar to us because they do other things. The three companies that really like us, which we've picked, are actually these three. And these are the three you should be looking at. Because remember, transfer pricing is not science. It's about finding balance and equilibrium and to being able to justify, not just with China, but with the US, with both sides of the fence. Where you're larger businesses, you have to have standard documentation at group level, but then you would have specific country documentation for each country to justify what that country does. So we call local files. Local files are local level, master file is a group level. Now, what happens if you get investigated? I've mentioned a little bit about that already. There's a lot of companies, if I had example, 60 people sitting in front of me right now, and I said, okay, hands up everybody who's got done a transfer pricing study review and has a report on their desk collecting dust just in case it's needed in the future. 9 times out of 10, very few people would put their hand up. Because quite often, companies seem to think that they only have to worry about that if they get investigated. Often, legal counsels will say, well, we'll worry about that if we get challenged. China can give anywhere between 7 days, if you're unlucky, and 60 days, if you're lucky, to actually reply to a request for investigation. And sometimes, if they believe that there is some erroneous transactions or pricing in the short term, so they'll typically look at 3 years, they can actually go back 10 years. And if they believe that there's fraud involved, they can go back to the beginning of time. And given the level of staff turnover in most businesses in China and worldwide, trying to go back even 3 or 4 years can be difficult. Trying to go back 10 years for most companies can be extremely difficult. And so we think that the best line of defense is to have some kind of transfer pricing documentation in hand, to update this documentation every year. And then if challenged by the authorities, you can say, there you go. Here's the last 10 year studies we did. At that point, the tax officers generally will have to think, have we really got a strong case or were we just on a fishing trip to see what we could catch? Because this is going to involve a lot of work because they've done their homework. Their review, they might do some testing on the comparable analysis within their own database. But as long as that came out as being comparable to the comparable analysis that the company had done, there's a high probability that any investigation would stop at that point. If they go into a company where the margins are totally out compared with the rest of the industry, according to their own, in the worst scenario, apart from just 7 days, you might actually have a letter that would say, according to our analysis, we believe that your margin should be 20% instead of 10%. And therefore, on this basis, unless we hear back from you, we believe there should be a tax adjustment of X. And so the best defense is documentation and having done some study to have thought about the transfer pricing. Are the number of investigations going up? Yes, not just in China, but worldwide. Because of COVID, most countries need to look at where their tax revenue comes from. In Europe, there's been a big thing about e-business, how taxes are paid by e-retailers or anything that's online, for instance. There's a push for a global standardized tax rate by the US. And this is all because countries believe that there's billions and billions of dollars being captured through low tax jurisdictions or being filtered through different jurisdictions to reduce tax around the world, and that they're not getting their what they believe is their fair slice of the tax cake from that company. And so it's not just within China. Remember, transfer pricing is two jurisdictions always, and if you're passing profits through multiple layers, every jurisdiction has to be looked at. But for those that have documentation in place, that's your first line of defense.
I think that's interesting. I think you've said this a few times in the presentation here today, but I think a lot of people think that transfer pricing is a rule that you have to follow. And actually, transfer pricing is a tool that's used to apply government tax agreements to make sure that companies aren't shifting income from one country to another. So transfer pricing, it doesn't exist on its own as its own regulation. It exists as a tool to enforce other regulations. You know, and that may be a minor point, but I think it helps people realize that there is a lot of wiggle room and variability in how you calculate and apply and defend transfer pricing, because it is a method that you use to meet these tax obligations, tax agreements between countries.
That's a very good summary, actually. It is a method, and it's a tool to determine the pricing, and it's a tool to defend the pricing. And if you're investigated, and it's, well, I should say when, actually, it's normally a when rather than. So the main thing at the time is, as long as you believe that what you've been doing is reasonable, is to go through the motions of, first of all, liaising with the tax authorities. Remember, they're just doing their job. The only thing I would say is if the tax authorities do come to offices of clients, normally we say the first thing to do is to ring fence them in a meeting room, be polite, ask them to demonstrate who they are, to make sure that they are who they are, ask them to explain what the purpose of their visit is and what they're looking to look at, because there's different taxes that are payable. So they might be looking at, they might not be looking at profits tax, they might be looking at a different tax. And then to see what they're looking at and to see what their timeline is. If their timeline is unreasonable, then to say, well, you need to get back to them to take their numbers and talk to your superiors, to assemble resources and to bringing together the documentation. And if you haven't got previous studies, to start preparing some kind of quantitative and qualitative analysis, and to look at how the risk of any adjustment can be minimized. One of the key questions is always, why are they there? So were you randomly picked from the database, which you were just unlucky, or lottery number, or were you an outlier in the industry? Were you on the fringes in the lower quartile of the profit margins within your industry? Or was there a whistleblower who had said that they believed your margins were unreasonable? So as best as you can, you want to understand why they're there.
In China, with the golden reporting system, where companies are putting in their VAT invoices and their custom shipments, their income, and all of that's being compared to each other, it also becomes easier, especially for the Chinese tax authorities, to identify that there's been a change, in the business. So I think that also increases the opportunity for them to target you, because they've seen you've always been at this level of income and suddenly it's dropped.
That's right. Their database is highly sophisticated. And it's always important to remember, if they're there, they're there because you're either part of a random selection, or you're an outlier, or they're there because somebody's whistleblown. There's always a reason, but at the same time, they may have opened a file, which means they need to close the file. To close the file, they need to carry out their tasks and go through the motions. And the better prepared you are with the information to support what you're doing, the quicker they'll be able to close their file. Or the less prepared you are, the more they might decide to drill down more and then go into a more deep dive investigation. Obviously, it's better to be prepared. It's also important, I think, to show a cooperative attitude, because they are just doing their job. But at the same time, push back with quantitative and qualitative defense, which is well metrics and documented.
Yes, I was going to say they are just doing their job, and it's better to be welcoming and sincere, consistent, as helpful as you can be, without obviously offering more information than they're asking for. And really, they, at the end of the day, they just want to close that file. So keeping that in mind, not being difficult, not appearing unprepared, all help you, because they're looking at everything, right? It's kind of like an internal audit. They're looking at everything.
That's right. They're looking at the whole business. And also, they're looking for you to say as well, well, sorry, we had a bad year last year. This is what we would normally have done, but we hope we're going to claw back next year. And also to remember, on the final conclusion of an investigation, there may be some tax payable, there may not. Transfer pricing is not black and white, and it could end up with a negotiation where they believe that your pricing should be slightly higher or slightly lower, and you believe vice versa. And it might be that you agree a number with them and settle and move on. Then there's a question of, if you have to pay some additional tax. Can that tax be clawed back through a double tax treaty in the jurisdiction where the China entity is trading with? And that's the key question. Then you're not double paying. Whilst I mentioned earlier about China, and I've also talked about COVID, all countries are looking at transfer pricing. And so it is about finding balance. At the same time, a lot of countries are looking at tax havens. And there are, for most tax havens, the economic substance tests now. So is there really substance in this tax haven? Or are you just selling it in at 8 and selling it off at 10 and keeping 2 margin in the tax haven at zero tax? Anybody operating in a tax haven, apart from having to demonstrate substance now there under the substance test, and not just China, but many other countries, are also going to have to be able to demonstrate the economic purpose of why that entity is making margin. In other words, what risk and function is it actually carrying out? And unless that can be demonstrated within any jurisdiction that's trading with a tax haven, in any jurisdiction, they're going to have a risk of being investigated, I think, in the future. Just to give an example of tax exchange of information, I talked about tax treaties, but actually a lot of tax jurisdictions now have either information sharing agreements with China, or have signed up to the Common Reporting System globally, or signed up to FATCA. So even take Cayman as an example. Cayman has signed up to FATCA with the US for information sharing. They've signed up to a Common Reporting System for sharing with over 100 countries worldwide. At the same time, they've got extremely strict information on reporting of ultimate beneficial owners, which in a lot of jurisdictions is 25%. For some companies in Cayman, it's 10% ownership, means that your details would need to be submitted. So whilst offshore jurisdictions or tax havens have a purpose within corporate group structures and may carry out certain functions, it's important to make sure that within your overall group structuring and your overall function risk analysis, that if there's a margin being kept within one of these entities, in one of these jurisdictions, there's some function and risks that are being taken by that jurisdiction to justify that margin along the whole chain of risk reward. So in the future, what would we advise? First of all, TP documentation, always at each level within the group, and employing consistency, focusing a lot on the activity. And I would say with COVID, focusing on the impact of COVID. I think all tax jurisdictions and all governments understand the impact, but it's being able to demonstrate that quantitatively and qualitatively, looking at tax treaties and how they might interpret your situation, looking at the substance tests for different jurisdictions. And I suppose also accepting the general environment going forward on transfer pricing is going to become less friendly, because every jurisdiction is waking up to this and it is going to be re-looked at globally. So I think companies, where in the past it might have been, as I mentioned with my show of hands earlier, it might have been, we'll deal with that when it happens. Well, I think it's happening now. All countries want their slice of their tax pie, and all countries will start looking at the outliers and looking at them. So companies, I think, if they weren't prepared in the past, I think they do need to be prepared going forward.
Thank you very much, Russell. That was fantastic. You know, I think there's so much about this, as you said in the very beginning, that's more art than science. And again, I think that's one of the misconceptions people have, you know, beyond thinking that it's an actual law in and of itself, is that there's some scientific method to it. And there's certainly, as you've said, there's objective measurement, but there's a lot of subject in terms of how you can defend and come up to create in the first place what your transfer pricing method is and how you implement it. And then also to defend it, should you find yourself in a situation where by one government or the other, it's being questioned.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think it's a matter of being prepared. And it's not the rocket science, as I mentioned earlier. It's a matter of finding that equilibrium balance between each jurisdiction and legal entity.
And if anyone has any questions, please feel to reach out to myself and Russell, and we'd be more than happy to help you, you know, understand this better and how it applies to your company. Thanks again, Russell. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you. And thank you, everybody, for listening. Goodbye.